Hey everyone, and welcome to Hero's Journey Physio Fitness. Our mission is guiding people to reclaim their health and become self-reliant. I'm your host, Dr. Cameron Hogue, and joining me is my co-host, Anibal Rios.
We're going live in 3, 2, 1. Welcome everyone to another episode of Hero's Journey. It's me and Cam here. I think you guys know that we're transitioning. We have transitioned. We're bringing guests. We're bringing you great information on various different topics. Today is no different. We're bringing in a specialist. Cam's going to introduce her more on the pelvic floor physical therapy, what that is, what that entails, and just going into a deeper dive into this topic, something that maybe most of us don't know or aren't aware of. If you get value from this episode, feel free to subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast to those that you know.
All right, guys. So today we have Dr. Erin Westner. She's a physical therapist, a certified pelvic rehab specialist. Erin is the owner of the Pelvic Method that opened in November of 2020. She's the founder of the Macaulay Integrated Wellness that opened in January of 2021, just a few short months later. She's been practicing as a therapist for 13 years, and 11 of those have been exclusively as a pelvic health specialist. Erin has a passion for educating and has made it her mission to serve her community by providing quality one-on-one care in her practice, but also hosting seminars, workshops, and so much more with community collaborations. She wants all people to have an understanding of pelvic health and the role that it plays in our overall well-being. Her most heard comment amongst clients when being educated on basic functions and anatomy of the pelvic floor is, why didn't I get taught this? And you know, why is this not being discussed more regularly? Her goal is for people to understand their body and what goes on with their reproductive, digestive health so they can positively impact so many other areas of their life. The body is all connected. Erin, thanks so much for being on. We really appreciate your time.
Good to be here. So
I just saw online that you guys just opened up a new location. Is that right?
We did. This is our second location. We are downtown Chattanooga on Macaulay Avenue. And now we are in off of Main Street in Ootowah, Tennessee. So we're really excited about that. We have one room up and going and it's pretty much almost full. So we're really excited. But now I'm like, okay. Gonna need more help soon and get our second room going faster than I expected. So that's really awesome.
Nice. So how many employees do you have working for the pelvic method?
So as of right now, I have 5 employees on top of myself. So there's 6 therapists total. So it's growing and it's getting really exciting. So.
And the Macaulay Integrated Wellness, is that connected with the Pelvic Method or are those 2 separate companies that you opened?
2 separate things. So the Pelvic Method is its own entity and like we really value holistic healthcare and making sure everything's integrated into other practitioners. So we know we don't work on an island. I know I can't fix everything. And this is a community and team effort with a lot of our patients, especially chronic patients that have chronic disease or processes. So we have in our office, we have a functional nutritionist who specializes in like functional medicine and does a lot more testing. We have a massage therapist. We used to have mental health and acupuncture. We're hoping to get that back soon. And then we also have midwives in our office as well. That see their office visits there. So we're really proud of what we've accomplished and have built a very good team and collaborative space. And I want to continue doing that as we grow the Pelvic Method. I want to make sure that the teams around us are solid as well.
I think that's so important. And I think you hear a lot of people talking about they want to help like holistically, but few are able to kind of do it. And it really seems like your mindset and how you are hiring and your mission is you are actually trying to bring an individual holistic health. I mean, I heard you have a dietitian, a massage, acupuncture, like that. Those are, you know,
huge
practices. Yeah, those are huge. Those are practices that, you know, you might refer somebody to go see and they may not see them, but when you have them in practice or like in the same facility, it's huge.
It makes it more tangible for the patient. Like they're already coming to see you in the same space. So you know, what's a separate visit with somebody else, or at least meeting with them and trying to get to understand what they do and what their value is that they can bring to their healing process. So it's really wonderful to provide that in one space. Cause you're right. Like a lot of people say they treat holistically, but they don't refer out. Like they don't suggest other things. They're like, okay, I've got you. I treat holistic. I treat everything. And you're like, no, that's not really how that works. Like holistic is really the whole body and you have to address everything. Like even no matter what type of practitioner you are only still affecting one area of the body, whether you're a body worker or you're a dietitian or you're a medical provider or whatever it is, like you're only really treating one area of the body. That's not really holistic. So you really need to make sure that you're, you have a team and people around you that you trust and know that's going to take the best care of your patients. So,
I guess around the whole holistic health, how would you break that down? Like what are the, like, I don't know, five pillars, five criteria, five things that would at least would need to be looked at to consider, be more considered holistic health?
Okay.
There don't have to be five things.
Five pillars. Okay. All right. Here we go. One.
Could be less. I don't know. Could be 10. I don't know.
And one and two. Yeah. So we'll try. I'll go for five. We'll see. So definitely one, mental health. Mental health is really important. Okay. I think that most people need at least some time in their life, somebody to help guide them through some mental health things. I think that's essential. It doesn't matter if it felt like it was traumatic or not. Like, you know, you maybe if you just work through some things, you realize how deep things actually go and connect. And so a lot of our pelvic health patients, we highly, highly suggest that they go see mental health at some point. Okay, so that's number one. Number two pillar would be the body and making sure you're moving, and no matter what that movement is, right? So like, are you exercising in yoga, or you're doing Pilates, or you're doing weightlifting? Are you moving is the key. Like, are you providing your body extra time to get lubricated, basically? We are all movement beings, and unfortunately in this world, static. You know, we're very linear, sure, in how we move, and we're just not dynamic. So if you're adding anything at any point, it could be one day a week, I don't care. I want you to add something to get movement in. So that's number two. Number three
more.
I'm working. I can go through it, I'm pretty sure. Is to have a body worker on your side or on your on your help, because you can't do everything yourself, and you don't know what you don't know. So if you have different body workers, so maybe you have a massage therapist, you have a chiropractor, you have a physical therapist, obviously, and then or you have you know, all these different aspects of somebody who's treating body work, and you can, acupuncture, that's also another one we recommend a lot. So somebody who works on the body to help the body recover or recoup. If you have like a small injury, but it's not just injury, it's prevention of injury too. So I think that's what's key to having body workers involved with, no matter who that is. And then I would say nutrition is definitely a big pillar on there. So nutrient density, like all that stuff, it's easy to get stuck in processed foods. And the more I learn about things, the more I'm like, oh my gosh, our world is screwed.
Yeah. There's so much crap in our food.
So much crap. And just like normal food too, like stuff that, anyway, I won't get on my little rabbit hole, but
we'll chase the rabbit later.
We can chase the rabbit later. We'll definitely geek out on that. But yeah, so nutrition is a big one. And making sure that you're doing that for yourself. And then the fifth, am I on five or am I on four?
That was number four. You're on five now.
Okay.
You're on five now.
I'm on five. Oh, yes. I made it. So number five is actually taking time for yourself. So it's kind of along the mental health thing, but like kind of looking inward and kind of understanding who you are, how you're reacting and all of those things, and looking more inward and how regulated you are. So that can be anything like grounding, mindfulness practices. It can be even just like laying outside by yourself, reading a book, whatever it is, like something for yourself to ensure that, you know, you don't get caught up in the rat races, really. And all of external stuff then becomes internalized instead of really knowing who you are. And that external stuff becomes internalized, and that can impact the body, the digestive system, the nervous system, all of those things. So you have to take time away from all of that junk and just be. So yeah, that's my five.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I put you on the spot there. I was like, I mean, it could be five, it could be less, it could be more. Well, something you mentioned, body work.
Yeah.
And it's something that we're going to talk about today. And that is, what the heck is pelvic floor physical therapy? I've never heard about it. Is it for me? Who is it for? Just give me like a high level overview and then we can go into a little bit more further.
Yeah. So pelvic floor physical therapy or occupational therapy, they can be either one, but pelvic floor rehab in general is basically looking at a different point of view. So we look from like the inside out basically versus like the outside looking in. So a lot of times we address let's say back pain, for example. We actually want to know what's going on in the pelvis first, usually, and like the digestive system, the urinary system, all of those things. We want to make sure that those things are working well, because there's so much of that that actually impacts the rest of the body versus going, okay, the spine, this is what this is doing in this section and that section. So we definitely look from like an inside the body and then go out. And then go to the pelvic floor and the pelvis and the alignment, you know, all the other things that physical therapists do typically. But we take a little bit more of an inside out approach to make sure that everything else is working in order to address those things. Because honestly, there's so much research out there right now, even that constipation, one of the number one causes of back pain too. And as well as if you have low back pain, you're probably having urinary leakage. So those are the two correlation things that they're finding out now. So if we're not looking at the bowels and we're not looking at the bladder and what you're doing, then we're kind of missing the boat on that back pain. So that's kind of how a pelvic floor rehab practitioner looks at that. But we specialize. So we went through physical therapy or occupational therapy school first and graduated with our doctorate. And then we have specialized after. So it's a postgraduate training that we do to get that rehab specialist. And we learn how to do internal, so either intravaginal, intrarectal work for male or female. Then we also work with adolescents and babies too, actually. So like we do have pediatrics that we see fairly often, but it's just not talked about as much in that realm. But neither is the male pelvic health. Male pelvic health is also not also talked about as much.
No, that is so interesting. I think something that comes to mind is there are some things that happen to your body that you think is normal because you don't question it. It's like, oh, just everybody feels
everyone poops
pain.
Blood, it's fine.
Yeah, I guess what are some things, male or female, that some people come to you and then later realize, oh, that's not normal, but they had no idea that their body shouldn't be functioning that way?
I think one of the biggest things is that people are, there's a lot of misnomers out there of like, oh, it's, you know, you're old, you had three kids, like you're gonna leak. And it's just an acceptance of a dysfunction more than anything. Or like, you have a period, it's painful, get over it. You know, like, so like, it's just, there's just a lot of stigma out there, or even like, even doctors kind of perpetuate that. Like, and they tell you, oh, well, I mean, you have pain with sex, like, just basically drink 2 to 3 glasses of wine and get drunk and then have sex and it'll be fine later. Like, that's literally advice that doctors give. And I'm like, you know, you still, even to this day, you're like, how about we move past this? Like, and we still haven't. So it's just this acceptance of crap, basically. That's not reality.
You're not wrong.
Excuse my language.
No, it's okay. Crap away, okay?
But yeah, so I think more of like that they don't, I think they know internally, like, this isn't right. But then they're told, well, duh, you know, well, you could just do that, you know, and kind of dismissed. And so then it becomes this generational education that has been passed down, unfortunately.
Do you think that some of it or part of it has to do with that that's a sensitive area? And it's like, you know, a lot of times in cultural, it's like you don't really talk about, I mean, some people do. You don't talk about sex. You don't talk about what's going on down there. You just don't talk about it. So then you don't really know what's normal and what's not because no one's talking about it.
Right. And in thinking of it from like, even like we have a lot of gentlemen that see us, but like, I mean, you could probably attest to this too. Like if you're having, I mean, gentlemen are a little bit different because like they usually jump to cancer first. So they're like, oh, I have testicle pain. Oh, cancer.
I'm go get it. I'm Lance Armstrong here.
Women have pain in their pelvis and they're like, maybe it'll go away. There's a little bit of difference in male, female there too. But like, but yeah, like there is that, like, it's hush hush. We don't talk about it. Don't look at it. Don't touch it. Don't, that's disgusting. Don't talk about your poop. Don't talk about your pain. Like, I don't want to know, like it's in the bathroom. It's private, you know, your alone time. Mm-hmm. Well, especially sex, you know, nobody wants to hear about your sex life. but not that we actually do care of what's going on in your sex life too.
Yes.
So. Not so that we know every gory detail. We don't need to know every detail. We just need to know like,
we need to know the main things here, people.
So last night I went out and it.
Two glasses of wine later. So when should somebody come see you? So when is something where maybe they're having a little pain, maybe they're leaking or something, when would be the right time to go see somebody?
I mean, truly just understand your body. Like sometimes people actually lately because of social media and like education that we're doing, like people are coming now just to what's going on down there? Like educate me, like a more preventative. I love that because the more you know about your body, if something does go amiss or something does happen, you're like, I know what this is. I can go see somebody or I know I have to work on my stress or I have to work on this, you know, things like that. So I think preventatively would be the best answer. But, you know, even if there's even a slight thing that happens, like they leak a little bit and it's usually only like for women, it's usually right before their period where like their estrogen levels start to drop and that shows weakness. So it's usually like a day or two before they start their period that they'll leak like just a little bit, but it's not bothersome because it's not all the time, but that's a warning sign. Does that make sense? So like there's little warning signs that we ignore on a regular basis because we're like, oh, that just happens every now and then. If it happens every now and then, there's a problem. Something's going on. So I'd rather catch it early than wait until it becomes a big problem later. So
that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of some of my thought process on this too, and especially how you said like men jump to cancer in their testicles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think like with pelvic pain, some people might even ask like, well, why am I experiencing pain or discomfort down there? Like, I can understand my shoulder or my neck or my low back, but like, why that area? And, you know, why am I experiencing pain there?
So they're muscles just like any other. So there's three layers of muscles that are in the pelvic floor. The three layers have different roles and different functions as we go deeper into the pelvis. But the muscle function, there's five main functions of the pelvic floor where you have structural. So it kind of supports the structure of the pelvis and the hips and all connect into that and your back and your belly all connect in that same area. So structural And then you have supportive, which is like the organs, holding the organs up, making sure you're not peeing or pooping on the ground, like anytime you feel the urge kind of thing. Sphincteric is actually that, really. The sphincteric is the third one, where it keeps everything closed so that it's not just leaking on a regular basis. And then you also have, just hold on, support. Oh, sump pump. So it actually, the pelvic floor, if it's working appropriately, it helps bring the lymphatic fluids up from the junk, basically out of your legs and into the digestive system, and excretes it. So it's really important. So it's called the sump pump, basically, of the body. And then it also helps with your just general digestion and evacuation and elimination. So that's really important. I mean, they're really big jobs for this small area. And, you know, I think that people often misunderstand that it's there for support. It's not the only thing that's active in that area. So the hips and the, like I said, the hips, the back, and the belly are all connected. So it's a part of a system, and the body is all connected. And so people think, oh, I'll just do my Kegels and that'll take care of it. Even 60% of people don't actually do Kegels correctly, but that's another story. But if you're not doing other things to support your pelvic floor with your hips, your back, your glutes, your abdomen, like your core, if you're not doing everything to support that pelvic floor, even your ankles for that matter, your ankles and your foot, if you're not taking care of those things, then your pelvic floor is having to work too hard. And then the load is too strong for that pelvic floor to handle. And then that's where there's a failure and a breakdown.
Wow. No, as you're explaining that, that makes total sense. Like as a PT myself, I think that way for any other area of the body.
Right.
But it's hard to think about that for that area. And that does make total sense. They're a muscle just like anything else. And just like muscles, they can have pain, tightness, dysfunction. Mm-hmm. I do want to say, you said something really interesting. A lot of people do Kegels wrong and think Kegels fix everything. Is that not true? Do Kegels not fix everything, Aaron?
Kegels do not fix everything. In fact, a lot of practitioners today, I still incorporate like a Kegel like education and understanding into my practice. But a lot of practitioners are anti-Kegel. Like they're like, okay, no more Kegels, period. Not really, but kind of like just to make a point, like Kegels are not what you need. You need to support the whole system. You need to look at the entire body. You need to look at the ankle. You need to look at the hip. You need to look at the back and all of these things, because it is a system. Your whole body works together.
So what is Kegel? What are Kegels working? And then how are some people doing those incorrectly?
So Kegels are, so if you would think about, there's a couple cues that we use for gentlemen, for you guys, and you can practice this. I'll watch your eyebrows go and try to figure it out.
Okay, here we go. Annabelle, get ready.
Get ready.
I'm sitting up for this.
Standing, sitting, laying down.
Where do you want us, Aaron?
You can sit.
Okay, we'll sit.
I mean, if you lay down, I mean, that might be a little awkward. I don't know.
Stay on camera, Annabelle, okay?
But basically, so for men, you would think about if you were walking in cold water and your testicles kind of like pulled up, you're like, your penis kind of like pulled into your body, right? Mm-hmm. And then stop from passing gas. So you have the two parts, because there's the deep layer, which is around the rectum and the deep bowl that lifts and pulls up all the organs. But your front part is your sexual appreciation, as well as for gentlemen, the testicular, making sure the testicular balance and heat is appropriate for that. So if you think about walking in cold water, testicles kind of pull up and then rectum kind of puckers up and in. So you do like a lift, like a lift, and then a stop from gas puckering kind of thing.
Okay. That is harder than I thought.
Yeah. and to do it, you actually, so the full test for a Kegel is to be able to squeeze for 10 seconds, rest for 10 seconds, and repeat that 10 times in a row to know you have a good, strong pelvic floor.
All right. Well, Animal, we got some work to do.
I tried that after the episode.
Yeah, and so for female, a similar thing. Like, so if you were to look at the, I wish I had my pelvis now. I wish I could like show you, but if you're thinking about like the opening or like the clitoris at the top, this is hard because some people don't even know their anatomy, which is unfortunate. But the clitoris is at the top, and the vagina is in the middle, and then the rectum is in the back. So the clitoris, you pull down towards the vagina, and then the rectum and everything pull up. So like you're actually doing like a pinch and then a lift of the pelvic floor. For women. So any women out there.
Do some practitioners teach that incorrectly?
Yeah, they just tell you to squeeze. And what happens is they end up squeezing, they end up like taking a bunch of abdominal pressure and like they squeeze their abdominal, or they take their glutes or their inner thigh muscles too. They'll like just grip everything and be like, I'm squeezing. And if I see everything in your body moving, then you're not doing it correctly. So.
Yeah. So with that, so if Kegels are a way to activate muscles and everything down there, if somebody is tight and they're Kegeling, is that feeding into a dysfunction or is that feeding into like a, how does that work, Aaron?
Yeah. So, they increase the tension. So it's much like if you were like if your bicep was like super tight, it's not like the bicep by any means, but, if it is the bicep and you were like here and staying here all the time and just like doing repetitions like this all the time, and you're never lengthening that muscle, then you're going to just end up with a bicep that stays like this and it can't lengthen anymore.
You're out of dysfunctional arm. Yeah. No, that does make sense. That's going to be the thumbnail of the video right there. Aaron flexing.
My muscles.
So I guess what can, a lot of people are probably afraid or nervous to go to see any doctor, especially probably a pelvic floor doctor. So what can they expect when they come to see you?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Is it effective? What, are there any risks?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are risks with any practitioner, I guess, because you never know what they're going to make you do. But when they come in to see us, we do a pretty thorough discussion. I ask a lot of questions, and sometimes those questions can be uncomfortable for the person. And so we kind of gauge it off the person and how deep we go. And it might be just creating a relationship later, that we get into like more details. So we ask some questions, kind of get to know the person, what's going on, how long it's been going on, all those things. And then I do a whole body like assessment. So I look at their back mobility. I look at their squatting. I look at their single leg stance. I look to see like, how is their body basically moving in general, just to like, see if I can tease out like, oh, like they're shifting with their squat. They're shifting to one side. So is one side tight and that's why they lean over there, or is one side weaker and that's why they lean, you know? So we're always like kind of like mentally noting things as we make people just move, and how the body is actually responding. And then we can do, we do an abdominal assessment, we do a back assessment, we do a pelvis assessment and a hip assessment. And then it's a general assessment. We do it pretty quickly, to tease out a couple of things and just, again, just making mental notes. And then what we can expect is an internal exam. So either rectally or vaginally, depending on your comfort level, depending on, you know, who you are. Like if you're a man, you don't have a vagina. So the only way in is rectum. So, so that is like what we end up doing. But only if the patient's comfortable with it. I think that's the key that I need people to understand, is that I'm only going to do internal if you're comfortable. It's, people don't understand that they have consent anymore, because a lot of times you can go into the hospital and the doctor's like, we got to do X, Y, Z and this and this and this and this. But you have the ability to ask why. And you have the ability to consent. And that's what I want our patients to know, or our people that come to our place, is that you have consent every time you walk in through the door, whether you're going to do something or not. Now, is it going to get you better faster? What I suggest? Probably.
Yeah.
Not always, but probably. Because I'll get to know more information and I'll get to understand what's going on in your body a little bit better. Or I can like be like, that's it. That's the spot. Yeah. Like sometimes we hit that spot and the patient goes, oh yeah, that's my pain. And it's really validating for them, to have an internal exam, because they're like, oh yeah, that's where it's coming from. But I mean, it's different for everybody. So we kind of, go wherever the patient allows us to go in that time frame. But then it might be something that we do later on. Maybe they're not comfortable with it. But as far as your question about risks, is there is always a risk if you're introducing anything internal. So we use hand sanitizer, then we put our gloves on, and then we put lubrication on our finger and go in one finger into the vaginal direction. But there is always potential for infection, right? So we could be introducing bacteria. This is kind of a funny thing because I'm like, if you're having sex, you're introducing way more bacteria than I will ever. I mean, so like I always kind of put it that way, and it usually lightens the mood, and you know, I can say like, this is the precaution, like, but you know, if you do experience like any burning, itching, irritation, like we need to talk to the doctor. But then that just might mean that then to me, I'm like, okay, your bacteria is not very good. So your nutrition is probably not good. Your probiotic, you know, we got to be thinking more like diet gut kind of stuff, to help their body be able to fight off anything that's introduced into their system. Cause if it's not, then I'm like thinking, okay, yeah, there's more of an in-depth thing going on. So.
Wow. No, that's the first time I'm actually connecting those two dots there on, you know, microbiome and the gut and ability to fight off infection. That's really eye-opening, Erin. Yeah. So let's say someone comes in, they see you and you do the exam and everything. And, let's just say you do find that they might need to see a dietitian or something. Mm-hmm. How does that look like in your practice? Then do you finish up your assessment? Do you then try to book them an evaluation with one of your dietitians or have them talk? How does that kind of work if they come see you like that?
I do give them suggestions. I usually try to give some general gut microbiome discussion first. And like try to tease out like what are they doing. So we usually give them it's called a bladder diary or a bowel diary. And I make them write down everything that they eat, everything that they drink, all the medicines that they take, like when do they pee, when do they poop, what does it look like? What does it just smell? Does it have like all the details, like all the questions? Mm-hmm. And they had to do that for like 3 days. And then we try to tease out any like low-hanging fruit first. So what I mean by that is like, you don't get enough hydration, or you literally eat no fiber at all, like in your whole diet. So we need to like, let's do a couple.
Fiber, never heard of her.
Never heard of a broccoli before. but like those kind of things. So like we tease out low hanging fruit first to see if we can make a big impact. And then if there's something more complex, let's say maybe they have like ulcerative colitis or they have like several different autoimmune dysfunctions or a thyroid issue. Then I'm like, we really need like a functional test of your gut. I need you to get a stool, like a GI map. I need you to get like a hair sample test to see if there's any like, heavy metals, just, you know, all the different things. Like, so they do a very in-depth approach. So then I'll lead to that. But if it's also somebody who's just complicated, like IBS, and they're, you know, well, first of all, IBS is also somebody I send to functional doctor, but if they can't afford that, then there are regular dietitians and nutritionists that are supportive. They don't do the whole functional deep dive, of those tests, but they at least give you more nutrient, education. And again, there's good and bad of everybody. So like, that's why I like to have my people that I know will do a good job.
What is the most maybe common diagnosis that you do see in your practice? Does it have to do more with like incontinence, sexual dysfunction, gut? What's the most common thing that you typically see?
All of the above. We do see a lot. So incontinence is kind of the biggest thing with everybody. Like usually if they're coming in for constipation, they have a little bit of incontinence. So everybody has incontinence, but it's not like the reason they come in. They usually come in for some other reason, and then incontinence is just kind of like, oh, it's part of that. And they've been having incontinence for a long time. Remember, like, warning sign, number one. But then they ignore it for a long time, or we're told that that's normal. And so, but then they come in with a gut, or they have painful periods, or or just like pain in general, mm-hmm. with like bowel movements and things like that. And then we started diving into that. So, I'd say probably our biggest thing is pelvic pain. Secondary is like postpartum pregnancy, birth preparation. We have a lot of people coming for birth prep now, which is amazing.
That is awesome.
Preventative stuff. Like I said, I think the social media and education, and especially our generation and younger, is very much like proactive, and not accepting of, oh, well, that might happen kind of thing. So, I really like that. Yeah. And then men probably are about like 30% of our practice, 20 to 30% of our practice.
Gotcha.
For various pain issues.
Before we go into, prepartum and postpartum, and some exercise and stuff, what are maybe some go-to treatments for incontinence? Since you're kind of saying a lot of people probably have it underlying, but that might not be the reason they see you. Do you have any like general recommendations, exercises, stuff like that, for incontinence?
For incontinence? Yeah. So if it's, there's a couple different types of incontinence. So
okay.
If we're just talking about stress incontinence, which is usually the number one thing that people think of. So stress incontinence means like if you cough, laugh, sneeze, you walk, or you like do a quick move to jump after your toddler, or you start running and mile 10, you start leaking a little bit, that's still incontinence.
Okay.
And, or even mile one or half mile for some people, you know, but like yeah. any type of leakage that's associated with a abdominal pressure, like jumping on the trampoline, anything like that, that puts pressure down on the bladder. And then you leak a little bit. So that's stress okay. incontinence. For that one, what's funny enough is that you're really working on reflexive activity. So you need to be able to relax the pelvic floor, but then you need to be able to activate it when it needs to activate. So you're actually working on the reflexive activity. So one of the number one, we actually just had an educational thing on this week. So I'm actually kind of excited. Uphill walking. So walking uphill. Helps that pelvic floor work on that reflexive drawing up. So that's number one. So just walking basically can help the pelvic floor. And then starting slowly to train your pelvic floor. And so let's say like reducing the mileage. So let's say you leak at every mile and you can't get through your 2 mile run. So you stop your training at 1 mile. And then like you would do like a walk run then. Like, so then you would like slowly, like, so when you're fatigued and your muscles need some more support, then you walk and you do more uphill because downhill is going to be harder on your pelvic floor. So then you would walk uphill. So you change your route up to make sure that, you know, you're doing a walk run uphill or something like that to retrain that pelvic floor for endurance later. So there's that. And then you can like slowly do, oh my gosh, we do like bouncing on a ball first. And then we do like, okay, now we're going to do sit to stand and work on like activating Kegel during that. And then we work. So we just kind of slowly build it up, slowly load it. But
yeah,
that's kind of how that
makes total sense. The answer was not just Kegel while you're sitting down.
Oh no, sorry. No, don't Kegel. And especially laying down because most people like, oh, do it at a stoplight. That's the biggest suggestion that's ever made is just do your Kegels at every stoplight you see. And I'm like, that's not. Because
we're putting that one to bed, everybody.
You need to train it in the position that you're failing, right? Like, so if you're leaking when you're standing and you're doing it all and sitting, you're not actually training anything.
not a lot of carry over there.
Not a carry over there. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So, prepartum, postpartum, let's maybe talk about, postpartum. Cause I do feel like that is a very common one as well. Mm-hmm. What are some typical things that you see postpartum? I know things like diastasis recti, obviously prolapse. Incontinence, prolapse, mm-hmm. Even just like weakness in the core and hips and low back because you know, they carried for 9 months and all that kind of stuff. So what are some typical things you see? And then maybe what are some treatment strategies or ideas to address those things?
So, I mean, it's pretty much the same. So like, we're still like loading the tissue. What the biggest thing is with diastasis and some of these things that people see is like, don't do this, don't do that. They get a lot of no's. and what they're allowed to do, and then there's fear associated with movement. So we really try to untrain fear and like empower people to actually move and to actually do things, and teach them how to engage. Because the biggest problem with postpartum is that A, you're sleep deprived. B, you are expending so much energy, whether it's creating milk or just feeding baby on a regular basis, getting up, doing everything. And your body's still trying to heal, whether it from a C-section or from a vaginal birth. Like, both of them are an internal wound that you can't see, which is hard for people. So they either return to things too quickly, and their body and their system's not ready to handle that load, or they don't do anything and they're fearful of it. And then it stays weak for too long. And then that prolonged weakness and that prolonged inactivity then creates problems as well.
That's a really good point. So when people go too quick, you know, like you're saying, what's the time frame on when people go back too quick to their like pre-pregnancy activities?
Well, I guess it depends on what the activity is, but,
Let's go with CrossFit. Let's say someone wanted to get back doing CrossFit or some sort of like high level fitness type stuff.
Like a HIIT program kind of thing.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. So my education to my people are like if they do that, then their uterus and everything and their ligaments are all still very lax. Those hormones take up to five, even while you're breastfeeding, they're still present. So if you're breastfeeding or pumping, it doesn't matter either one. If you're still lactating, basically, those hormones and that prolactin and relaxin are still there. And so all of your ligaments in your whole body, and your organs are held up by ligaments. If that's still happening, then those ligaments are still very lax and very loosey-goosey is how I would put that. And so not for everybody, everybody's a little different, but it just depends on your own body type. But if you go back to that too quickly, you're creating impact on something, a system that is just still being stretched too far. So you're more at risk for causing a prolapse issue and definitely incontinence. Most people will know that they have incontinence. They won't know they have a prolapse until it's too late, where they feel the vagina basically outside or at the opening of the vulva. So
yeah.
So basically, it's just like if you're gonna return to activity, you have to do things, and you think about it as if you first started doing any activity. You have to start from the beginning, and you have to, like, if you're gonna go do let's say box jumps, you have to do step ups first. You have to bring it down at a lower level and work on step ups and slowly progress that to a higher step, and then start doing one jump, but not like consecutive jumps. Like, do one jump, take a little break, step back down, and then take a jump, and then take a step down, and then take a jump, and then step down. And then you slowly build that up. Same thing with running. Like, you're going to start with walking. I said, you need to strengthen your pelvic floor. You're going to start walking and just start walking long distances and make sure there's uphills in there to train your pelvic floor. And then you're going to do a walk jog program, and you're going to do 4 minutes and 1 minute, 4 minutes walking, 1 minute jog. And you know what I mean? Like, and then you're going to slowly build that up until you are running. But what people don't understand is that it will take months to build that back up postpartum. And if you're breastfeeding, then, you know, just being cautious of the activities that you're doing. Not that you have to limit everything and not to stop doing those things, but just make sure you're not doing your one rep max and lifting heavy as much as you can. And just do the motions, go through the activity, do your endurance stuff, but don't push to fatigue. That's probably the biggest advice.
How long does it take for the uterus to actually return more towards it, or to its normal size after pregnancy?
6 to 8 weeks.
6 to 8 weeks.
That's okay. Why 6 weeks checkup. They want to make sure everything's going okay with the uterus. Gotcha. Usually to the assessment. Any wound you get can any healing time is usually about 6 weeks And then that's why they say, okay, you're healed. But if you're still bleeding, your wound still isn't healed. So you're just a slower healer. So like, if you're still bleeding, then it's, you're not able to work out because there's still a big open wound in your uterus. This is kind of graphic, but
go for it. Animal might pass out, but
it's not going to stop me. I'm just going to keep going. But, so the uterus is, you know, the big ball in there and has the baby, but there's the placenta that sits on the outside. So whether you had a C-section, which it does cut through the uterus and make an actual incision site, which is a healing process, but you still have to remove the placenta from the wall of the uterus. So it's embedded into the uterus and you peel that off. It's basically like peeling off part of your skin basically and revealing, you know, like a raw, like, yeah. So like, it's very gross. You're like, sorry, but it is, it's a very big open raw wound inside your uterus. So you're welcome. So
that's going to take, yes.
You're welcome.
So that's going to take 6 to 8 weeks for that to just recover because it's an open wound and got stretched. Mm-hmm. So what about with individuals who do have a diastasis recti, that kind of the tear in their stomach on the linea alba, and maybe those individuals who are breastfeeding, but they want to start slow. They want to do your recommendations of getting back in. They don't want to do nothing. They're not fearful. They're not going to go do hit stuff and then cause prolapse and, you know, instability and stuff. What should they do if they're wanting to get back to their pre-pregnancy weight or just get strong again and not be so fearful of, you know, the tear in their stomach or losing too much weight, you know, with breastfeeding so they don't hurt their supply?
So weight loss is kind of tricky. And it is different for everybody. Some people gain weight, when they're breastfeeding, some people lose all of their weight, with breastfeeding. It's a totally misnomer that you lose all your baby weight when you're breastfeeding. But if they're wanting things, so you can do like more dieting, kind of like not restrictive. I don't like restrictive diets because you need to make sure you have the energy for both you and the baby, but the energy comes from nutrient dense foods. So choosing things that actually have, a value, like high value in vitamins, minerals, fats, like good fats, and whole foods. So your fibers and all those things, making sure you're getting that food, is important. And so you can eat a regular, you know, meal, like you can eat your regular meal for you. And if you eat the nutrient dense, your body is going to pull out what it needs for the baby, which is what I don't think people understand entirely, is that your body is so smart. It is going to take everything from you to give to baby what baby needs. And even then, like, there's even education on like the baby's saliva when it goes to actually breastfeed, will tell the body, the mama's body, what it needs. And then it will then push those nutrients forward and into the breast milk for the baby. So it's so intuitive what your body does. But if you're not giving your body what it needs for itself too, it's going to take everything from you and give to baby. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care about you anymore. You are a sacrificial lamb at that point. Like, your body will take everything from you and give to the baby. So your baby's going to be fine, but you have to make sure you have enough nutrient dense foods to support your body too when you're working out. Because there's two things that can happen is, one, you lose weight too fast and cause problems that way with more of a thyroid function and, other hormonal things. Like there's a whole slew of that. That's more of a dietitian nutritionist standpoint, but, you just strain your system basically too hard, too fast, or your body will go into starvation mode and hold on to everything. So there's a couple like you have to kind of do a balance of activity, nutrient dense, that kind of stuff.
So don't So don't cut your calories to one of those starvation diets and don't eat processed foods and things that are just void.
But void it is of okay to, any nutrient, yeah.
Yeah, void of any nutrients. But if you were to restrict some, but you're eating all whole foods and you're giving your body what it needs,
yeah,
that could be a potential way to start to lose some weight, but give, you know, the nutrients to your baby and everything.
To you and baby, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You and, yes. What about diastasis recti? We've had a couple questions about that and like what kind of exercises should, I don't want to use the word avoid because I know we're trying to empower, but is there anything that they should avoid and exercises to do?
So, this is kind of a controversial thing. So like they say, like if you're doming too much, too long with exercises, then you need to not do that, or you need to like slow it down or back it down. Modify the exercise. So that's really the biggest thing. Like if you see like in that separation of the abdominal wall, if you see that pouch push out and it stays there for the duration of your workout or like for your activity that you're doing, you need to back that down. So let's say, for example, like maybe even like trying to do pull-ups, because that's actually a lot of core work too. Like trying to do pull-ups or kipping pull-ups or something with CrossFit. That doming stays out there the entire time and you're just like cranking them out and doing well here, but your abdominal is still stretching and pulling, then you're creating a problem long-term that is going to be harder to fix because you're stretching that tissue out long-term. That being said, you need to strain that tissue in some form because collagen does not lay down unless there is activity. So the whole problem with avoid, don't do, is that people stop doing planks. They stop doing core work altogether, and then it doesn't activate those muscles. And so then there's no strain, there's no stress on that tissue, so then it doesn't lay down more fiber to strengthen that linea alba.
That makes total sense. So it's individual, but if for everyone listening, if you do have that, look at the exercise that you're performing. Aaron's saying if it's a doming and is doing that for the duration of the exercise, that's the one you might want to cut out. Mm-hmm. But there are planks and side planks and other exercises where it might not dome, but you need to strengthen that tissue for those collagen matrix to lay down and everything.
There's 100 different ab exercises that you have lots to choose from.
So, yes. Not just sit-ups, people.
Not just sit-ups. Please don't.
Annabelle, I think you have one of the kind of final questions.
Yeah. So it's a question that we like asking all of our guests, I think, in the health and fitness space. It's more than just, you know, doing the exercise or doing whatever they recommend. And what we see is that some individuals are able to make those changes long term and others are not. And in your experience and what you've seen, what has been one of the biggest predictors or one of the things that you say, okay, if I see this in this individual, I think we're going to see long term success with them?
So you're saying like what's, sorry.
Either behavior, whether it's.
Whether, like.
Yeah. If, or.
Okay. So what are some indicators that we're going to get long term.
Yes.
Success with. Yeah. I think the biggest question is like, do you think we can help you? Is like, if you, do you think that I'm the person that's going to be able to help you? And it can be person related too, right? So like, if it's not, like if they don't particularly care for my energy level or my, you know, my bluntness, then maybe they're better with somebody else who has like more of a reserved personality. And that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. That's why I have a team. You're going to do better with somebody that you resonate and trust and open up to, because then we can get more information to get you better faster or longer term, like for long term. So you need to be able to trust the people that you're with and understand that they can help you. And if you're not feeling that, then you need to change to somebody different. And it's okay to ask for somebody different, I guess, is also another thing. So I think it's whether or not they're open to it. And then I also how open they are to the education. if they, like, we have patients. I mean, they still come, but, like, they will say, like, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, okay. So we're not going to make as big of changes as you want. So if you're not going to cut the VAT diet out, then, or you're not going to change, you know, this about whatever it is about your routine, then I can help a little bit, but we're not going to make lasting. So how open are you to the education? And then I guess, it has nothing to do with how fit you are. I have 95-year-olds that their goal was, they're in an assisted living facility and they wanted to go from their bedroom, living room to the bathroom when they feel an urge without peeing themselves. And at 95 years old, we're still able to make progress. So
nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's
incredible.
That's great to hear. So Aaron, where can people find you in terms of like physical locations that you have online, you know, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So our website, you can check us out, is thepublicmethod.com. Okay. And we are located downtown Chattanooga, off Macaulay Avenue. And then our downtown location is, or sorry, our Ottawa location is off of Main Street in Ottawa on Watkins Street. So we have two locations, whatever's convenient for you. Our phone number is just one number for both of them, so make it easy. It's 423-825-9340. Okay. And then info@thepublicmethod.com. If you have any questions or concerns with anything, we're happy to answer you. But yeah, so those are the main places to find me. And then our handle for like any social media stuff is @the_pelvic method. So from there we can do a lot of different things, where we also promote like seminars that we're doing, or like any community events that we're hosting or a part of. We usually post it on our social media.
I was going to ask about that. Do you have any ones coming up in terms of events or workshops or anything?
Yeah, we do. We have a fertility workshop. So it's kind of fascinating that physical therapy can work with fertility in a multitude of ways. But so fertility workshop is coming up, hosted through the Chattery. So you can go to thechattery.org. And we are going to be there September 21st from 9 to 1. And so it's not at the Chattery because of that whole situation, but, they have all of that information on the chattery.org. You can get your tickets there. And then I also have a Reclaim Your Wellness, for women. It's a brunch and learn. So it's also going to be a charity event. So we're raising money for Love's Arms, which is a local organization for sex trafficking victims, to help get them off the street and integrated into society and help them reclaim their lives. So we named it Reclaim Your Wellness because there's a lot of stuff out there in social media too that is just confusing. And where do people start? What do they need to pay attention to with their own body? And taking things like little gems to kind of help them be successful and reclaiming their wellness. So that's coming up in November 2nd. And that'll be at the Marriott downtown. And Eventbrite is where you can find that one.
We will put this in the show notes. That way all the listeners who are hearing, they can kind of see, we'll put the phone number, your website, user handle, and those workshops coming up and everything. But we got some last little bit. Animal's going to give you some fun rapid fire questions and we'll close it out. But Aaron, we really, really appreciate you coming on. I know that I learned a lot today. I know Annabelle, you probably did as well.
No, I definitely did. Thank you so much for coming on. And these are fun little questions. It's just, you know, rapid fire, yes or no. First one, Kegels, yay or nay? Salty or sweet?
Ooh, salty.
Machines or dumbbells?
Dumbbells.
Upper body or lower body?
Ooh, I'm a lower body.
Yoga or Pilates?
Okay, like Pilates, probably a little bit better.
Pilates, okay. All right, thank you so much, Dr. Aaron Westner. Everyone, like we like telling you, remember, you're human. You should not seek perfection, but daily improvement.
See you guys.